Raw, uncut, and unapologetic. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness.
Welcome back to Men Talking Mindfulness. This is Will, and John's over there in Colorado. This is a solo episode for us today. And you've probably heard this saying before, lean into the discomfort. So why is getting uncomfortable so important if you want to grow and live a fuller life? How do you go about leaning in? How does this relate to the dreaded V word, vulnerability? And what will life be like if you choose to if you choose continued comfort instead of occasional discomfort? This is what John and I are going to unpack today. So we're so happy you're here for us and enjoy this ride. Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about anything that we're up to, just simply text MTM to 33777 to see everything that we're doing, including our May 16th leadership retreat in Colorado Springs and our live virtual meditation course that starts April 9th. Find out more once again by texting MTM to 33777. Before we kick off the rest of the show, let's just do one breath grounding practice. Or you want to say something, John? You just want to say hello? Or,
oh, yeah. No, yes, is what I said. No, yes.
Yeah. Sorry. We're just trying to get efficient and get done. But hi, John.
Hey, good brother. To see you. No, good to see you. I know we're actually recording this solo. It's going to air while we are in Los Angeles at a podcast convention, our first podcast convention. So we're excited to go out there and learn more about podcasting and see how we can grow the show, but as we've said before, more importantly, grow the impact of the show. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to the video. And I'll jump right into the one breath grounding practice. So let's just find our feet, find our grounding, and then just bring our attention to our breath. And we'll begin by exhaling, holding empty at the bottom. Now a nice deep breath in into your belly first, then into your chest, holding full at the top, and let it go. And as you let it go, just feel that relaxing and bring some movement into your body, wiggling your fingers, rolling your head around your neck, rolling your shoulders. And let's get into this. As you're reading that intro, I started to think about Michael Easter's book, The Comfort Crisis. And, I know we're going to be talking about leaning into the discomfort and getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. And, you know, a large underpinning here is getting comfortable being vulnerable. I can't even say it. I'm so scared of that word.
Great point, John. Great point.
But man, I read that book a couple months ago, and we're hoping to get Michael Easter on the show at some point. But it was funny. I was doing a kind of a combo read and listen, and in between chapters, I would listen to it on a drive. And he talks about how we've gotten so comfortable, sitting in 72 degree weather, whether it's our air conditioned house or heated house or our air conditioned car, heated car, and then and we've gotten so used to having all the food that we need right at our fingertips. And as I was listening, I looked down at the temperature in my car, and it was perfect, 72 degrees. And I had my seat heater on, and I was like, oh, wow, I've gotten comfortable being comfortable. And
very comfortable.
Yeah. And
in your big truck.
Yeah. Right. I need to push myself outside of my my comfort zone. And something that I've spoken about several times before, and spoken about with a good friend of mine, and she says, you know, how comfortable are you inside your comfort zone? And ironically, I actually feel uncomfortable when I'm in my comfort zone. Like, I feel like I'm not pushing my limits. I feel like I'm not pushing myself. I feel like I'm not learning. Like, just before I came on the show, I was doing some Spanish studying on this app that I have, Duolingo. Nice. And I've been doing a few weeks straight on this app, trying to just learn Spanish for fun, right? I learned it in high school, and I was like, oh my gosh, I just can't wait to be done with this, which I wish now, looking back on it, I wish I'd paid more attention. But anyhow, I'm doing that because I want to, broaden my horizons, and I want to push myself outside of being comfortable. And, that's not all we're here to talk about is pushing yourself to like past your limits or expanding your horizons, but that's just something that popped up as you were reading that intro. I'd love to turn it over to you for a second, bro.
Well, no, I think it's like there's a, when you speak of uncomfortable, I mean, it's not just the physical realm. It's not just about like having, you know, 60 degrees, like we, like you kind of mentioned, or seeking like a warm climate or something like that. It's like there's also that is just the way that you kind of react to discomfort, or the way that you want to seek comfort is also shows kind of what's going on the inside in some ways. If you're willing to embrace like emotional discomfort, embrace, you know, being in front of somebody and apologizing, or you know, or speaking truth or something like that, or injustice or whatever, or something that you're feeling, or maybe just admitting that, you know, you love somebody or you really care about them or something like that, like that uncomfortableness is going to show up on the inside, or as part of the, you know, kind of the stuff that we don't necessarily talk about as men. We're always trying to be tough on the outside, you know. But like there's a mental and an emotional toughness here that comes along with getting uncomfortable, and you can use the physical to kind of find and discover and develop more skill around, you know, getting uncomfortable in your relationships and in all relationships, including to yourself.
Yeah.
So there's a lot here.
Yes, absolutely. We're not going to unpack it all in this episode.
No,
and I get through some of it. But, you know, something else that came up is another book I recently read is No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Oh, yeah. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, so many nice guys, the folks who feel that they are nice, are actually some of the worst liars. They lie to themselves, they lie to others to smooth out their lives. Like, they're afraid to confront others, they're afraid to you know, bring up issues within their relationship, they're afraid to bring up issues at work because they're because they want to be perceived as nice, and because they want this perfectly smooth life without any challenges. And the irony is that by being nice and not confronting themselves or confronting them, the others in their lives, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a colleague at work, they're actually causing more challenges. They're actually causing their life to be harder than if they had confronted these individuals or confronting these challenges. And I know I'm just quoting a whole bunch of books here, but you know, Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle Is the Way, that is the way. That is the way. You've got to challenge yourself. Right. You've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable and going through those challenges, going around and over those obstacles to get to the other side, rather than completely avoiding them. And yes, we're talking about some emotional things here by not telling the truth or facing these emotional challenges, but we're also, how can getting uncomfortable physically actually enable you to face these things that are emotional or mental? And that's another piece that we definitely want to talk about. So how can getting physically uncomfortable help us to be a more emotionally vulnerable or emotionally literate?
Well, there's a bunch, like, you know, and from me personally, like what really has helped me grow emotionally, and really emotionally in the sense of like getting over the self-sabotaging negative beliefs, self-doubt and shit. Like this is like when I really seek uncomfortable, you know, discomfort, and that cold shower, cold plunging is huge, huge. And now when I mean, I've been doing the treadmill for about a year and a half now, and I did it this morning again. It's like, man, when that heart rate, there's something about when you go in, when your body has such a knee-jerk reaction to a physical environment or a physical circumstance or physical exertion. And when I, you know, I was thinking this today on the treadmill, when I, my heart rate kind of goes way up to like zone five. So I'm at like 90 to 100% cardio output and cardiovascular output. Like, oh my God, all my shit starts to come up. Right, all of it. I mean, it just like, I'm like, oh, why don't you just stop? Why don't you just slow down? Why don't you, you know? And I'm just like, so I'm battling myself for several seconds, maybe several minutes, in order to kind of regain control and not fold into, you know, that self-sabotaging and those negative beliefs. You know, same thing when I go into the cold, the first minute is awful, like really awful. I mean, I'm just like, oh, get out of here. Why am I doing this again? Like, you have nothing to prove. You do it all the time. You know what I mean? And just like, and all, and, that, and it's almost the same conversation. But in those moments, like, I get to really see the mind, which is so key.
Yeah.
Like really see the mind and then really start to, you know, this deal, right? The thoughts, what are the emotions that start to come up, right? And how do they work against you, right? The emotions feed more of the thoughts feed the emotion. And, you know, and then you want to take that action of just quitting or
right.
whatever, getting out of the water or slowing down on the treadmill or whatever, right? So I'm able to see more of that, like, you know, the conversation with my ego is trying to attach me to and get trying to get me to do something. Instead, like what I do in these circumstances, I use them to like, okay, how can I get into, you know, create like a state of more self-mastery? How can I get back to myself and calm myself down?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what do I need to tell myself? What do I need to do? Breathing is a huge one in any one of these things. And it's like, and it's just, if you're going to be more mindful and more resilient and more flexible and more agile about anything and open yourself up to the ability and the availability to learn right from that circumstance, you have to find your breath. Because that just immediately starts to calm me down. So I really, this is like all of those experiences, right? Are anytime I provide myself with a new experience, like when I climbed that mountain, you know, a month ago in the volcano, like, fuck, man, was that really challenging? But it's a new experience. Like I haven't really climbed an altitude that high in years. You know, it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. Plus I was on like a volcano, I was in a different country. I was walking on like sand. It was like very, very challenging on so many levels and I could have quit at any one of those moments because it was so challenging. But I also had, which is key, I think with all this discomfort, I had a goal in mind. There's something in my mind that I wanted to achieve and see and do, and that kind of helped to pull me forward. You know, so something like cold showers, like I want to feel awake. I want to feel more alive. I want my body to work more effectively for me instead of working against me.
Yeah.
So many things here that come up with this opportunity for growth, and that's what leaning into the discomfort can do. But like sometimes you just take a baby step or two instead of just like going into, you know, 32 degree water. Maybe start if you know this is legit. This is both ways. Instead of going like almost frozen water, like 34 degrees, 36 degrees, which is wow, that's very challenging.
Yeah.
What if you start at 50? And this is a metaphor and like analogy and like, you know, and the way you can do it. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Well, all I could think about is, you know, 2 months ago when we were in New York, Will takes us to this bathhouse that this Russian bathhouse that's been, I don't know, since 1862 or something.
1892.
It's been there a while.
Yeah.
And all these famous people have been there, like John F. Kennedy. They've just got all these pictures on the wall of Matthew McConaughey and like all these actors and models. Anyway, they've got these various temperature rooms and some of them have steam and some of them don't.
Yeah.
And then they've got this pool.
Fuck.
And I assumed that the pool was like, I don't know, lukewarm or whatever. And I go from this one room that's like, I don't know, 160 degrees or something. It's crazy. And I stepped into this water and it was 40 degrees.
Yeah.
But there were all these people around and there was like no way I was going to step in and step right back out.
Right.
And so I got in it for about a minute and then got out. I was like, oh man, that was uncomfortably cold. And then and then walked out and I got back in another one of the steam rooms with Will and our good buddy David Valadez was there. Shout out to David. And then Will and I challenged each other to get into this cold water. We're like, all right, let's do 4 minutes. And man, that first minute was hell. I'm a retired Navy SEAL and I've done cold water, right? But man, it was brutal and I wanted to get out. But after that first minute, then it started to get a little better and we were focusing the whole time on our breathing. Like Will was right next to me. I could see he was focused on his breathing and I know he could see I was. And he even pointed out, he's like, oh yeah, you look like the frog man because I was like floating in the water. But the whole point here is
that's awesome.
My whole point is that a lot of the time, that first few minutes or first few hours or maybe even first few days or weeks, months, whatever it is that you're doing that is uncomfortable, after you do it for a while, your body gets used to it. And yeah, I'm not saying that you're going to stay in 40 degree water for a day at a time, but I'm saying after two, three minutes, we got used to it, right? I mean, right. I did not want to stay in there much longer, but we got used to it. And our bodies, our minds, our emotions, we can get used to the discomfort when we intentionally put ourselves in uncomfortable positions regularly. Yeah. It's good for our minds, it's good for our bodies, and it's good for our emotional side as well.
Yeah.
And not just the ability to step out and be uncomfortable, but it also it strengthens us.
Yeah.
In all sorts of ways, so that we can be more resilient when we get knocked down, like physically or metaphorically. You know, having done these hard things in the past intentionally is going to enable us to do hard things in the past or in the future. You know, my good friend Jason Van Camp, his book is called Deliberate Discomfort. And he talks about choosing your hard. You've got to choose your hard. You know, choose your hard, be it cold showers or getting in the gym or getting on the treadmill, or your hard is going to choose you. Because, you've got to prepare yourself. So doing the hard physical things can prepare you emotionally.
And but part of that emotional life on the inside, I develop a hell of a lot more self-confidence and self-trust. If I know, I mean, every time I want to, like, there's always like when, I don't know, you tell me, John, if this is your case as well. Like, you know, every time I want to go, like I want to increase the time on my treadmill today.
Yeah.
You know, walking forward, walking backwards, sidestepping, right? And I was like, all right, I'm going to go up a little bit. I'm going to go up to like, you know, 38 minutes or something like that. To do the whole thing, to do the whole cycle. And it was just like, even to do that, I was like, then my mind starts going, why are you going to go a little higher? Like, why are we even doing this now? Like, and then, you know, you go take a cold shower or something like that. It's just like, oh God, why are you going to do this to yourself again? You know, like, you know, you did it yesterday, or like, you know, you plunge forever. And it's just like this mind keeps going and going, but it's like, and I think I'm very influenced right now by Stephen Pressfield and his book Turning Pro, and also I'm a big fan of the War of Art. And now I'm reading his Daily Pressfield book. Like, it's a daily kind of you know, little daily dose of, you know, wisdom from Pressfield and from his two books, the War of Art and Turning Pro. And, you know, he talks about resistance, and resistance is always going to be there, and you need to see resistance for what it is, which is, it's an opportunity to do the hard stuff, to show up. And the only way you're going to really continually, and I'm seeing this in my own life, that really continually achieve success is keep showing up and not listen to the resistance. And he also says, when you show up in those circumstances, we can almost feel it. Like, you know, when there's moments on when things are physically hard, whether it's, you know, any physical experience that's very challenging and very, you know, uncomfortable, is if I stay there long enough, like he also talks about the muse that starts to show up, which is the muse is like all of a sudden this kind of divine intervention that helps to lift your spirit or create more, you know, creativity around a particular project. And all of a sudden it's like, boom, you have this massive download of like creativity or this inspiration to stay longer. And I can do this. I can stand another minute in the cold. Yeah. I can, you know, walk in, I can go a little bit faster in the treadmill or whatever. I can hike that mountain all the way to the top and not stop or do whatever, go back down. So it's like when you begin to, because that resistance is always going to be there. It's just some, for whatever reason, you know, I'm sure it comes from how, you know, our species was developed over a very, very long time, because comfort is something very, I guess, was very fleeting to us. You know, but, you know, when we are, you know, more of a primitive culture, now it's all the norm. So like, I think we have this predilection to seek comfort because it's so rare in our DNA.
Yeah.
But now it's like comfort is everywhere. I mean, over the last, like, you know, definitely 80 years, like, it's definitely easier to achieve comfort, like, almost instantaneously. Now we're going so, the pendulum is going so into the opposite or the wrong direction, I feel, of just comfort all the time, that is literally just damaging not just the individuals in our society, but damaging society itself.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's it. That's the whole premise of the comfort crisis that Oyster's written. And you know, this morning, it was 20 something degrees out. And normally what I do is I will go out and I will start the cars up for myself and my wife and warm them up. Mm-hmm. And a good part of why I do that for the minivan is because I'm going to be driving my kids and I want them to be warm when they're there in the car. But I forgot to do it this morning. And my little girl, when I was driving her to school, she was complaining up and down about how cold the car was and how cold she was and was she going to warm up. And I'm like, sweetheart, you can handle some cold just for like 5 or 10 minutes. You're going to be okay. But I also want to come to the flip side of that, which is an interesting way of kind of turning this conversation to vulnerability. A lot of the time when we are struggling with something, our pride keeps us going. Our ego keeps us going. And our pride can also get in the way of being vulnerable. Like, let's say, for instance, the volcano that you're hiking. Mm. You did it. You crushed it. But if you had struggled, if you were really having a challenge and you needed to ask for help, would that have been something that you could have done? Like, asking for help, sometimes that is the harder thing to do than pushing through. And I've got a challenge coming up this weekend. It's a 24-hour hike. And, you know, to be completely honest, there's a little anxiety in me.
That's going to suck.
Yeah, it is. It's going to suck.
I mean, I'm excited for
great.
You.
But it's like, going to be great, but part it's also going to suck. Yeah. But, you know, hey, I'm embracing the suck, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a part of me that's like, oh, man, is this going to be something that I can do? And yes, I know I can. But if I'm struggling, am I going to be able to be vulnerable and say, hey, you know what? I need to sit down for a minute. I need to take a break.
Yeah,
and is there importance? Is it important to be able to do that? I think there is. I think it's absolutely important to be able to ask for help. And we've talked about that on the show before.
Yeah.
So, you know, that self-awareness that we have, I think there is definitely value in pushing yourself physically. Understanding where your boundaries are versus where we perceive them to be. But at the same time, there's value in understanding the importance of asking for help.
Yeah. It's definitely a pride thing, asking for help. I have no problem asking for help now. Like, if I needed someone to carry my backpack, you know, that weighed, I don't know what it was, maybe like 25 pounds. I mean, which is like when you're going up like a very steep incline, I mean, it's fucking every step's a little bit, you know, more effort. If I needed to, I would have asked somebody to carry my bag. But it was also like I was trying to find that balance, like, you know, getting into the, I can do this and I'm going to do this on my own. I didn't get into a real troublesome spot, but I guess it's like, you know, because I've tried to continually develop more vulnerability in my life all the time, every day, every year. Now I trust vulnerability. Now I have confidence in vulnerability, meaning like every time I open up in any circumstance or whatever it is that I'm uncomfortable, the response is incredible. You know, I'm not shamed, you know, if I'm with the wrong group of guys, like, I wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? You got to know your audience, you know, like, and what they're capable of and your vulnerability might rise up in them. And if they're like, you know, a bunch of, you know, knuckle dragging, you know, members of our masculine society or females too, it's like, you know, they might just rip you apart for showing yourself in that vulnerable state. But like, if you're in the right company, and also not to say like, you know, you can't, that environment you're in with these like kind of hardened males, if you will, you know, can't take some vulnerability as well. I mean, I know your audience. So, but normally most people are not like that. But when I ask for help, it's amazing. People want to help.
Sure.
You know, they want to assist another human being. And they're almost, I think it also brings up like the oxytocin, you know, when you do get vulnerable. So you feel this like instantaneous bonding with another person, whether you know them or not. There's just something that opens up. There's like a doorway in the mind and the soul and the heart of humanity that kind of opens up in that moment. It really binds us in a very meaningful way. And we can easily get the hope that we can. We also might be gaining a friend, a lifetime friend or something like
that.
You know, that's how incredible vulnerability is, just asking for help or saying you don't know. You know, like, I don't know what to do. Like, that's another thing that men really get trapped up in. It's like, you know, try and always be a know-it-all when they're just like you mentioned earlier.
Thank goodness for GPS, man.
Yeah. Oh, right. I know.
It's changed the fact that men don't have to try to not stop for directions. They just punch it in their GPS. But sometimes that can even lead you astray. But I was thinking about how vulnerability and embracing this discomfort that we're talking about can improve your relationships. And you touched on it there, but it made me think of this story. And I posted about it recently on social media that back in 2005, I was involved in Operation Red Wings, which for those of you who are not familiar, Operation Red Wings is the lone survivor story, where Marcus Luttrell was the lone survivor of this whole operation. We ended up losing 19 men. But just prior to that operation, which involved I'm being vulnerable with my language or lack thereof. Anyhow, it involved inserting an element of four guys on surveillance and reconnaissance. And they were going to observe this village, this compound, for between 24 and 72 hours, gain actionable intelligence, and then an assault element was supposed to come in after that and take down the compound. Well, we had done similar operations throughout that deployment, but this one was kind of different. The planning for it was not great, and the environment, the area that we were going into, or that these guys were going to be going into, was very high risk. And I had one of my guys who I just thought the world of. I thought he was just super courageous and a man of steel. He came up to me right before they headed out that night. And he's like, "Hey, Mac, I'm scared." And at first, there was a piece in me that wanted to be like, "What? Like, I thought you were the bravest guy on the planet. How can you be scared?" And then there was another piece of me that wanted to be like, "Dude, suck it up, man."
Yeah, right.
Right? And then there was a part of me that was like, "Holy shit. This guy is telling me he's scared," which that in and of itself took a lot of courage to do.
Tremendous.
Tremendous amount of courage. And then over and above that, he went out and did it anyway. He went out and did the operation anyway. He ended up dying, unfortunately, on that operation. But he went out and he went out swinging. Like he was brave, super courageous until the end. And him telling me that actually made me picture him in an even more respected light. I thought the world of him before that. But then him telling me that he was scared and then doing it anyway. One, him telling me that he was scared was incredible, and it was a point of vulnerability for him, but he did it, and then he went out and did the operation anyhow. That changed our relationship. Now, granted, like I said, he unfortunately died on that operation, but if he had stayed alive, that would have changed our relationship moving forward. And that can change our relationships with I need to have some type of energy drink or some coffee or something. Wake me up.
But it should do some more breathing.
Change our relationship with our spouses, our colleagues, our friends, our children. Like telling your kid that you screwed up, telling your kid
what's that like?
that you're scared. Oh man, I tell you, I've got young kids. I've got a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a soon to be 3-year-old, and when I screw up, and I tell them that, I can see in their eyes that their perspective of me, their perception of me is changing, and it's changing for the better. And that's that's an amazing feeling, and I can feel our bond strengthening.
Right, right. Well, it's almost I kind of had kind of the opposite upbringing in the sense of, you know, I love my dad. He did the best he could. You know what I mean? And my parents both did with what they knew and who they learned from, you know, which is their parents and his grandfather, you know, and all the generations before them. You know, and it was kind of like my dad raised us like in a very authoritarian way. It's like, you know, he showed no vulnerability, you know, didn't even, you know, never, you know, really had a hard time admitting he was wrong or apologizing. And when he did, you know, it was just always like, it was just one little quick moment of apology, and then it was like never spoken of again.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It was almost like there's like almost like a shame associated with it by being wrong or being falling off the white horse, if you will, or
perceived
something.
As weakness.
Yeah, perceived as weakness. You know, and that's like, you know, and that's like, I guess that's one thing. One of the pitfalls of vulnerability is people think that, you know, you're falling into, you know, you're a weaker man or a weaker person because you know, were vulnerable, or you admit you're scared, or admit that you're at fault, or, you know, need to apologize, or, you know, admit you're wrong, like I said. It's like, I think anytime like we access more of our humanity, and one thing, you think about the word courage, John, it comes from the Latin and French root cur, which means heart. So when you're courageous, right, and you're speaking from you're speaking truth and being vulnerable, you're speaking from your heart, you know. And here's that the seal you talked about, like he was acting through his heart too, because that's what he signed up for. You know, he got to that place in the military, I imagine, because that's where his heart wanted to be. Like he wanted to serve this country, and here's his opportunity to serve this country. Sadly, it took his life, but we're kind of memorializing him right here, right now, by talking about his access to vulnerability. So, like, thank you for that lesson. You know, especially in like one of the worst circumstances that you can possibly, you know, be in at war, which is just utter chaos. I would imagine, like, I've never been to war.
Yeah, so, I mean, it can definitely be, I think the ones who are not scared are one, either
the most
lying,
scared.
they're either lying or there's something wrong there.
Yeah, they're broken in some ways.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody is scared in some way, and you know, certainly we're talking about war, but where else are we scared? I mean, hell, I'm scared every time I hit go live on this show, right? There's a little bit of fear. And funny enough, on this particular one, we're not going live. We're recording. And I hit record, and sure enough, there was a technical glitch. You know, every time there's a little bit of fear when I step up on stage as a public speaker. And honestly, I think if there weren't some level of fear, that shows that, again, you're either lying or something's wrong, or that you just don't care. When I step on stage, I care about my audience. I care about them receiving the message that I'm putting out. When we go live, I care about the product that we're putting forward, but I also care about our audience and them hearing the message that we have to put out. So by being a little bit scared, by being vulnerable, I think that shows that we care.
Yeah, I think one thing that comes up when you're talking about this particular vein, indifference, I think, is really important here.
Yeah.
Like indifference in the sense, because one of the reasons that we get scared, one of the reasons that we seek comfort, is because we are afraid what the results might be. If we change something up, right? And it's going to be something that we haven't experienced before. So therefore, you know, I mean, it's just, the mind is just really, oh God, it can be very challenging in the sense of like the way that it continually wants to seek only what it knows.
Right.
And when you put yourself into a vulnerable state, you know, and you step forward with more courage, you know, you're creating more of this awareness, but it just like, I lost my train of thought, John. I was bringing it back to what I was saying, the first thing in this topic.
I'll jump in with, you know, something that we've quoted on the show before, and and actually Teresa Larson, our business partner and friend, who's actually going to be coming on the show again, and we've had her on the show twice before. But her husband sent out a message recently quoting this, which is quite often misattributed to Nelson Mandela. And it's Marianne Williamson. And it says, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." Which I think is tied directly to what you were just talking about is that quite often we're afraid of the inadequacies, but we're also afraid of what we might be capable of.
Yeah. What else? That was coming back to trying to maintain control of circumstances, which is a complete illusion, and it just gets me in trouble every single time, because it's not only like I'm trying to control the external circumstance, right, and like manipulate and do whatever, or like, you know, just all sorts of stupid things in order to just maintain control for my ego.
Yeah.
But it also I stay locked in the box of emotional control. I'm trying to control the situation so I don't feel like that uncomfortable of whatever it is, or of you know, just being authentic in some ways, you know, or admitting fault, like I said a bunch of times already. It's like, you know, because then I'm like out of control, and then it's like the mask comes off and the costume comes off, and it's just like kind of standing there naked. It'd be like, oh, now what do I do? And right. I mean, but that's you know, if you want to aspire to the person that you keep seeing, and you want to be, or aspire to the person that you know, great personalities, great people that have like changed the world or changed the community or helped change their family, then learning to be uncomfortable, right, and learning to manage yourself in those situations, and know that you're going to be able to work your way out of it, or pull yourself out, or just get to the other side somehow organically, but you have to go there. Yeah. Like, it doesn't it's not like, you know, the course, you know, for vulnerability, you know, it kind of starts wherever you want it to. You know, I mean, there are definitely skills you can gain. Mindfulness is going to be super helpful as far as like getting to know your breath, getting to know your mind, getting to meditate. So when you're in these circumstances, you can feel that energy begin to spike inside of you. Like, I know, like every time I want to do something uncomfortable, whether it's something physical, whether it's something in a relationship, or whether it's something with myself, it's like I can feel this rise of emotional energy inside of me that just is almost like, oh no, what are you going to do? You're going to mess up all this comfort that I'm experiencing right now. And it's right. Like, oh, why are you doing this again? You know, but as I keep going deeper in or beyond, you know, that like knee jerk reaction, I just step into that field of opportunities again, which is like where I always want to be living, because, you know, if I only live in my little bubble of comfort, I just have horse blinders on all the time, you know, and we even get locked in there even more now because of the echo chambers of social media. So for real, right?
Oh, no,
this is
absolutely.
Like, you know, how we're being influenced, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so. And you know, the control, both the external locus of control and the locus of control and the internal, that's quite often a fallacy, right? There's no such thing,
completely.
Right?
Completely.
Especially with the external, right? We're not going to control everything around us. But the other thing that came to mind was the masks that we wear. We were talking about that, and funny enough, I have this image that I scribbled, and this is actually the second time I've shown it today. I'm not sure if it'll be if you can see that.
A little white.
No, it's a little white because of the green screen. But basically, what it is, it's this person who has taken a mask off, and the mask that they're wearing is this happy face, and underneath the mask is a face filled with terror and sadness and anxiety, and that's where I think a lot of us live, is this kind of with this mask on. But we need to understand who we are underneath that mask, and it's that deeper awareness of who we are. And then once I think we understand that, then we can start to really get into that state of vulnerability, the state of discomfort that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Now I've lost my train of
thought.
So we're backing each other up here. This is why we need a guest sometimes.
It's all good. We got this. So what are some first steps would you recommend, John? Mm-hmm. You know, like with maybe a baby step, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was going. Is two things. Just like meditation, just like the gym, just like anything. Mm-hmm. Is it takes time and it takes consistency, and you're not going to jump into, you know, like Will was talking about before, 35 degree water and be able to do that. That's something that you would work up to. And, you know, and the same thing with broaching emotional discomfort. You're not going to go out, and I don't believe that you're going to be able to go out and tell your coworkers and your spouse all the challenges that you have, but maybe broaching small ones and just kind of testing the water one with them, but also testing the water with yourself and finding out where your comfort levels are, and then be consistent with it. And I'm not meaning every day go to your spouse and tell them, hey, I've got a problem with the way you're doing things. That's not what I'm talking about, because that's probably not going to go well. But maybe being open and vulnerable with something that you're afraid of. Telling them that this is where my train of thought was going. The perfection, the failure of perfection, the fear of perfection, the fear of failure, and the inability to achieve perfection. That is what causes us a lot of fear and anxiety. But when we can realize, one, that perfection doesn't exist, and that two, you're going to screw up. There's going to be things that you screw up. And I saw somebody post on, actually it was Kevin Seif, a fellow Navy SEAL. He posted on LinkedIn the other day. He said, perfection is procrastination disguised as quality control.
And I was
damn, that's genius, man. Because a lot of the times when we don't do things, we're like, oh, well, I want to be perfect. I want it to be perfect. I want it to be perfect. And in wanting it to be perfect, we end up procrastinating and never doing it. And that's, we have to overcome the fear of imperfection. I think that's what I was trying to say earlier. I got a little confused again.
Perfection is an illusion too, just like control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and that's it, you know, you just gotta, I mean, leap in the net will appear is what helped me, bring me to New York. Just trusting that, you know what, like I have what it takes. I can take that first step. I could start. What helps me take that first step and then take the next step is just the consistency you're talking about. But taking little steps, like, you know, you can just, it doesn't have to be like a big admission. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could just be, just put yourself in a new circumstance, or a circumstance that's maybe a little like out of your comfort zone. It just could be like a social event, or like go to, like, you know, or maybe if you're surrounding yourself with whatever you typically do, like, what if you go, you know, just do something different, taking some art, you know, and just be inspired by what other people have done. I mean, a big, you know, one thing that that I've continually experienced by leaning into discomfort and the willingness to be more vulnerable is like my creativity just expands because the perfection goes away, that illusion of perfection goes away, the control begins to go away, and like, so I'm not holding on to myself and thinking the way things should be, or victim, or playing the victim because the way things are not for me right now.
Right.
But like, I can just process the world in a way of how the world is. Like, it's changing all the time. That's why control is just such a, you know, an illusion.
Yeah.
And same thing with like perfectionism. It's just like everything is just changing and changing and changing. And if you're, you know, you gotta let go. I mean, you just gotta let go.
Really popped up with me with what you just said is that you trusted yourself.
Always.
Went to New York City and you trusted yourself, and you said, I'm the type of person that can do this. And I think that's what doing a lot of this discomfort, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, does for you. Not only does it change relationships, not only does it enhance your creativity that you mentioned before, but it enhances your trust in yourself. Like my wife and I, we've got three young kids, and we, you know, retired from the military. I retired from the military, and we up and moved from Virginia Beach to Colorado Springs. We didn't know a soul out here. And we're like, you know what? We can do this because we've done uncomfortable before. And we had full faith in ourselves, and we had full faith in one another. I knew that she could do it. I knew that my kids could do it. They've been uncomfortable before, even as young as they are. I knew that they could do it. Not that there's a whole lot to do at their ages, but still, you know, leaving friends behind and coming into an area, and specifically at the height of COVID, we moved to a new town where we didn't have a church because church wasn't meeting. I was no longer in the military, so I didn't have my military unit that was now my automatic in-place network. We just moved, and that was uncomfortable. But I had full faith in myself, and I had full faith in my beautiful bride, because we had done uncomfortable before. And you had trust in yourself moving to New York City because you had done uncomfortable before.
Yeah. Well, let me just maybe we can finish with I'll just give you a little short synopsis of my step into New York, like, you know, how I got here. Because it's like the whole thing is all baby steps, but like I grew this little creative child that I have inside of me, and I manifested into who I am now. But it started with, like, you know, there was a massive, you know, event, right? I had my heart broken, and I was just devastated, and I couldn't put the piece back together. So then I just decided to
that's you being vulnerable right now, is you sharing that story, right? What that did for you. Sorry to interrupt.
I mean, I share this story because, like, I'm just a regular human being having a regular human experience like everyone else in this country or on this planet, right? But, like, I decided to take life by the horns, and realizing, like, you know what? Like, what I'm doing in this corporate world right now, and I worked for a pharmaceutical for 6 years, was not satisfying my soul at all, you know? And I kind of, my soul, because of this heartbreak, really started to show itself, like, yo, dude, we got to do something with this life that we have. I was like 27 at the time. So I started reading The Artist's Way. I started doing, you know, just reading a book. That's how I started. I started reading a book and then doing the work. I started writing doing the morning the morning pages every morning, three pages, stream of thought, working through those 12 weeks that took me like 15, like it's 12 weeks in the book, going on these artist dates, you know, all this writing, all of this work that I was doing, I started to take, I decided, like, you know what, like, I need to just figure out myself creatively a little bit more. I need to do something in this way.
Yeah.
So I went and I became an actor in Philadelphia at the time. I remember taking my first acting classes. They're fucking so hard. Like, I just, but like, talk about vulnerable.
I was just
talking
about
putting yourself up in front of people and talking and then trying to, you know, have a whole history or a whole life on stage for people that is actually authentic and moment to moment. It's like incredibly, incredibly, incredibly challenging. And you're sitting there being watched and viewed by other people. So things started to really take off. I just started to feel more of myself as I was living in Philadelphia. I left Philly in 2003, moved to New York. I just kept taking bigger steps. I started auditioning for theaters here. I had auditioned for, you know, putting yourself up to audition is like, oh my God, like, it's hard. It's really fucking hard. But like, I kept training. I kept going back to class. I kept, you know, getting the lessons, like getting the lick in the sense of like, oh, we don't do that, you know, on stage, or we don't do this. Like, how do you prepare? Like, what do you do? How do you serve the artist? Like, how do you serve the writer? Like, how do you serve the director? Like, how do you serve the audience with this message? You know, and just growing and growing and growing, like getting in bigger auditions into like Law and Order and like bigger productions and like getting on stage in front of like hundreds of people. It's just like, wow. And I just kept going. I kept going. And it's like, so over time, like, I developed my own way of speaking to myself that's empowering. You know, I just developed practices around so I'm not completely freaked out by the discomfort and like the nerves that I'm going to experience before I go on stage. stage or before I go on to an audition, I keep going back and training every week, like multiple times a week, training on my own so I can continually find more grounding. That's how I found meditation. I wanted to be more grounded and be more present in the moment. So I found meditation as a means to find all those things as well as more of my authentic self. And I just kept going. I kept going. I started teaching yoga, right? Teaching in front of like 60 people. You know, it was mortifying in the beginning, but now it's like playing jazz. You know, but it just,
what's
like
the story you told it before, like one of your first classes, didn't you?
I got
dropped.
Pulled.
Drop it. No. There's that. But
I dropped the B bomb. I said, "Hey, everybody, let's find our breast." And I was like sitting there. And this is one of those moments, John. I sat there. It was like 3 seconds. Everyone was silenced. And I was like, oh, fuck, dude. Like, I just said the word breast in a room full of women, right? And then I just turned around.
That's amazing.
And I was like, you know, because I have, like, cause I was able to be more flexible in the moment because I've had all this other training before. And all I said was like, oh, this is going to be a fantastic class. And everyone just laughed their ass off, broke the ice, realized what vulnerability and authenticity can do for me in that moment. And it never, ever left me until this day when I'd show up and teach.
I
lean in, and it's like, it's really empowering. But it's like, once you get on that ride, once you begin to develop that self-discipline, that self-talk, that kind of, you know, keeps you in the cold water or keeps you on the treadmill or keeps you in that uncomfortable conversation that you're having with someone in your life. It's like, it's all possible, and you're never going to get there if you're continually seeking comfort and remaining comfort. And it also goes for, you know, what's the company you're keeping? If they only want to keep comfort or keep numbing or doing, like, they're not helping you either.
Yeah. Amen. No. Amen. So yeah, we can get in the cold water to get physically uncomfortable. We can, you know, stand up on stage and do improv or acting to get emotionally uncomfortable. We can, I don't know, pick up an instrument and try to learn a new instrument and play that in front of a group. Then, you know, that takes a lot of getting uncomfortable. Bottom line is, we got to get both comfortable being uncomfortable, and we have to learn how to be vulnerable. I think those are not necessarily opposite ends or opposite sides of the same coin. They are connected. I know that you have a hard stop coming up here, brother. I'm going to turn it over to you to wrap up with any final words in our closing practice.
Just get uncomfortable. Find easy ways to get uncomfortable, but definitely ways that are going to challenge, you know, your current way of thinking and doing things and current level of comfort. Like, it's possible. And we've said it so many times in the show before, but like, and also in those moments when you're deliberately putting yourself into that discomfort, you're showing up for yourself, which is a sign of self-respect.
Oh, I love that.
Which, you know, like, so like, lean into that. Like, make that your goal. Like, and maybe that's part of it too. Like, what's the goal of you taking this moment of vulnerability, whatever that's going to be, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationship, or, you know, or something else. Like, it's like, what's the goal? What's going to be on the other side? What are you going to learn, you know, by being and getting uncomfortable? And one thing we can do in order to just help you step into that arena of discomfort, right? Let's just find our breath for just 5 simple breaths. And you can just do this before you step on stage, before you, you know, tell your boss that you're going to quit your job, or, you know, before you, you know, break up or propose to somebody or say you love somebody or change your relationship or your life forever. Just take 5 breaths just like this. And watch how this can help you ground yourself a little bit deeper, right? Get yourself really organized and oriented to the moment as it is, and then come out authentically with whatever that next word, the next step, the next action is. But let's just, you know, eyes are closed if you like. We're just going to do 5 big breaths in and out. We're going to in through the nose, out through the nose, nice and easy. Let's start with a nice little exhale all the way out. Empty through the nose. Big belly, broad breath through the nose. Keep going. A little more. Easy out. And as you exhale, drop down. Feel that grounding into your seat or into your feet, and do it again. In 5. Exhale out. I think of the breathing as you do this, as you're kind of filling with life and filling with the moment. Another breath in. Easy out. One more time. Inhale. Or we got 2 more. exhale. And you can even, when you're doing this breathing, tell yourself something positive, like, yeah, I can do this. This is going to happen, right? I got the right stuff. One more time. Inhale. Let it go. That's it. And like, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yeah,
love it.
Awesome, John.
It.
This is wonderful. It's nice to see you.
You
as I love these solo episodes.
I do too. I mean, I love our guests, but it's always fun just to have the two of us here chatting and being real and being authentic. So, you know, sticking with our raw, uncut, and unapologetic, here we are being vulnerable as well. So, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends, your family, your colleagues, whoever you think could benefit from it. And please give us a review, follow us on social media. We appreciate you for listening and tuning in. So until next time, take care.
Yeah, yeah. But let me just say, hey, if you're still listening and you haven't signed up for our text yet, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, text MTM. If you're a regular listener, like, we're not going to spam you. Just text MTM to 33777 and get in the know of more Men Talking Mindfulness. We're here to serve you. We're not here to spam you, right?
That's
here to serve you. Thank you, John. Okay, thank you, everybody, for listening.
Take care, everyone.
John, much love, brother. Peace. Be vulnerable.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.